Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit corin.com.
Have you heard? It's party time. Monday, December 3rd is Winter in the Garden, Heritage Radio Network's second annual year-end gala at the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens Palm House and Yellow Magnolia Cafe. Join HRN's staff, hosts, members, and some very talented chefs and bartenders for a delicious evening that will kick off the holiday season and support our end-of-year fundraising drive. The evening will begin with a VIP hour, complete with bubbles and oysters. Then, all of our guests will work their way around two spacious rooms filled with food stations and bars, sampling fare from some of our favorite chefs. Sip on your choice of cocktails, beer, wine, sake, and cider while bidding on exclusive silent auction items. 2019 is our 10th anniversary. So, whether you've been a member since Roberta's first opened, or if you just discovered your new favorite food podcast, please consider supporting us with a ticket purchase so we can start the year on solid ground. We'd love to see you at the Garden. So join us on December 3rd. For more information and to purchase tickets, go to heritageradionetwork.org/gala.
Hello, welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deeper understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from a studio at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is a mystery for many people, so I'll try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. And my guest today is Shintaro Elazar Okuda, and the chef de cuisine at the Bar Moga in the West Village, New York City. Shintaro has a unique background. He grew up in Japan and came to New York to cook at some of the best Japanese restaurants in the city. Currently at the Bar Moga, Shintaro cooks a yoshoku, an important part of Japanese culinary culture, which is yet to be discovered outside Japan. So today we'll discuss Shintaro's unique culinary journey, what yoshoku is, and how yoshoku is accepted by New York City diners, and much more. But before we start, Japan Eats is available on Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify and subscribe to Japan Eats. And please write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. Also, if you have any ideas about topics of the show or show guests, please let us know. You can email us at japanese@heritageradionetwork.org or kikotema.com. And you may have heard before the show, but Heritage Radio Network is holding a holiday party and tasting next week, Monday, December the 3rd, at the Brooklyn Botanical Garden in New York. And there will be great food from popular New York City restaurants, including a great kaiseki restaurant, Naoki Takahashi. Also, you can watch a soba making demonstration by a soba craftsman and chef, Shuichi Kotani. And of course, you will also find beautiful cocktails, wine, and Japanese sake. For tickets, please go to eventbrite.com and search for Winter in the Garden 2. That is Winter in the Garden number 2 on eventbrite.com. And for Japanese listeners, there is a code for 10% discount. It's Japan Eats, just one word, Japan Eats. So I hope to see you there. And finally, if you're a subscriber of Netflix, please watch The Final Table, which was just released last week. And it's a culinary competition among 24 of the greatest chefs in the world. And there are 10 episodes to determine one of the winning chef. And each episode features a very specific country. And I am judging on the Japan episode. So I was very impressed by each of the competing chef's skill sets and the philosophies. So again, it's a final table on Netflix. I hope you enjoy it. Now let's start our conversation with Shintaro Elazar Kuda. Oh, hello, Shintaro. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me.
So, so you work at the Bamogan. I had a Koko Kayoko Seo, and she does the Wednesday special cocktail program.
Right.
And Francis Nels, he created the cocktail program. So this is the first time to talk about food on Japanese. So I'm so excited about that because they're so good. So first of all, let's talk about unique background. So I heard you grew up in Japan.
Yes. So I was mainly grew up in Hokkaido, which is the northern part of Japan. A lot of snow, a lot of forest, mountain, a lot of wilds.
I heard that's the best snow in the world.
Definitely, yeah. From what I experienced, definitely. I used to live in D.C., also, you know, being here in New York too. Japan's snow, Hokkaido's snow especially, is definitely the best.
I've never been actually. So tell us more. Yeah, so so you grew up in Japan, but the Hokkaido is a very northern part. They have plenty of natural bounty.
Yeah. Definitely. I live with my grandparents, and both of my grandmother and grandfather always, you know, bring some wild stuff. My grandmother went to go get some wild plants, you know, like sansai.
Sansai means the mountain vegetables,
right? She always get it like when it's season, and just cook it. And so I'm always attached with like nature. A lot of I wouldn't say primitive, but more like attached to like on its land itself, food a lot, and it's really great prefecture.
Yeah, it's like a local sustainable by nature.
Definitely, yeah.
Right. Well, I'm curious, with Japanese sansai, the mountain vegetables, are they different from those in America?
I actually haven't had a chance to taste a lot of mountain vegetable in America, or I just don't know what that is. But I think so. The Japanese mountain vegetables definitely like tastes really potent. Has more aroma, like a lot of like, I don't know, like the wildness, but with like sensitivity going on at the same time, I would say. It's really good.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I think the Japanese, the whole land is covered by forest. I think 70% was still covered by the forest. So, yeah, there are plenty. As much as the species of fish, they have a lot of different kinds of mountain vegetables. Right. So you ate different kind of fish and the mountain vegetables?
Definitely, yeah. There's a lot of seafood, especially Hokkaido. Like, the fish itself is super fresh, and also the vegetable. Like I've been eating a lot of fresh vegetables, like just picked out from mountain type stuff. So, yeah, it's from my personal point of view, it's totally different from eating processed fish or vegetables, like any kind of food, like everywhere else in Japan, like especially like compared to Tokyo. I know that they have a lot of fresh stuff, you know, like those old Tsukiji market that now doesn't move to Toyosu, but a lot of fish coming from a different area, but I feel like where it's caught is it's freshest. So I was enjoying a lot of fish, meat, lamb, beef, pork, chicken, everything that I was able to enjoy in Hokkaido.
It's interesting, right? Because Hokkaido is completely kind of independent in terms of food culture, because it has dairy, and it's so huge that they have, you know, the ocean lines as well as,
definitely.
I mean, the kombu.
Yeah.
Most of the kombu comes from Hokkaido. And then they have salmon and crabs. And
Yep. I got to enjoy all of that when I used to live in Hokkaido. Yeah,
that's how you got into cooking?
Yeah. My grandparents always cooks for me, and especially my grandma. She makes the dish every day for me. It's like always remarkable. As a child, like, you wouldn't want to eat like vegetables, or like, you know, you would always go to like something sweet, you know, like more like child's taste palate things you would like more, but I was never hesitant to eat, you know, vegetables or like fish or like, you know, in any cooking way, because just my grandma's food was just simply amazing all the time. Yeah.
Right. So it was a traditional washoku, Japanese cuisine.
Definitely, yeah. But she was able to cook a lot of different things too, like surprisingly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So she was, that's the, your DNA probably.
I guess so, yeah.
Right. Right. Okay, so so did you study cooking before you became a chef? Did you go to school or how did you?
I actually have never studied cooking. It was all self-taught or... then again, my grandparents has taught me a lot of stuff, especially my grandfather taught me like how to cut open fish and stuff.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, not many grandfathers can teach now. Wow.
Right. It's in such a weird way, though, because my grandparents will be like just catching fish and you know, off the ocean, come back and just not saying anything with the shochu on his hand, being like half drunk. And cut open the fish, just like make me watch like an entire process. And I was like, here, you try next one. I was like, okay. Like,
hey.
Yeah.
Well, that's, I think, a culinary school. That's you taught the same thing, but you pay for it.
Right.
In a formal
way.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. So you, I think you went to the best culinary school.
I guess so, yeah.
Right. So you came to New York in 2008, but did you cook in the Japanese kitchens?
Yeah, I've worked in a Japanese kitchen in Japan, just back in when I was like 15 to like 18. Not like it's time to time though, this is all part-time work, but I worked at the food court and went to the supermarket and also worked in like fish opening up section, like meat opening up section, like where it's like behind processed food was like made.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where I was mainly working at.
By the way, the level of Japanese supermarket is amazing.
It is definitely amazing.
Yeah. We discussed that, like, you know, how convenience store in Japan is completely different from here.
Oh, yeah.
But the supermarket also is like a Disneyland of food.
Definitely. You just go into the fish section of a supermarket, you're just going to see a whole lot of fishes, like, where, like, I don't know, in America, you see, like, place where, like, you know, filleted fish, like, laid over. It's not just like that. It's, like, you know, it's all, like, plastic wrapped, all packaged, like, and all kinds of fish where you possibly not be able to get in Hokkaido, too. Like, you know, there's definitely fish from, you know, southern part of Japan, like Kyushu. You know, when it's seasoned, there's like Thai there. Like, yeah, it's great.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, I don't know how many of our listeners have been to the Tsukiji fish market, but it's like almost like small section of it. Very shiny fish, which you don't see here because it's so perishable, but it's well kept.
Yeah.
And yeah, whenever I go to Japan with my mom to supermarket, just let's go. I'm spending too much time. Just excited about it.
I definitely do the same.
Right. Okay. So yeah. So you came to New York in 2008. So did you become? Did you wanted to come? You came to New York to become a cook or chef.
At that moment, I didn't really have like any vision of my life. Obviously I was 18.
Yeah,
I was not smart at all. So just trying to live life. I just thought New York was cool, so that's why I came here.
That's the whole lot of people do it actually.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, I was luckily be able to get a job at Ippudo when I was open. So that's how I started. And
Wow, that's a perfect timing.
Yeah. And I was realizing like how cooking was like really like attached to my soul and like my heart. Like every time I see dishes, like, oh my god, this is so beautiful, like I want to do the same. So like it definitely built my passion.
Right. Well, Ippudo is one of the most foundational ramen shops in this country, I think. And you know, Momofuku noodle bar is American style, but Ippudo is kind of the opposite of showcasing traditional Japanese style. And I think that 2008 they opened the first Ippudo abroad. So you jumped into that ship. Right. So what did you learn at Ippudo?
Well, when I was 18, I started as a server. I wanted to work in the kitchen, but there's no kitchen position available at that moment, so I was able to work at the server. And I relearned how disciplined like Japanese people are.
Mm-hmm.
Like compared to like American restaurants, they put us like super strict every single day, and we go in. Literally, we change. We start working like nonstop, and until we close the door, until we close everything, like cleaning up and everything, we had to work with so much passion and so much discipline. Like if you do something wrong, they're gonna be staring at you,
ooh,
and they'll pull you on the side and hey, what are you doing? it's that kind of strict. But then after, like everything's done, cleaning's done, everything's done. We go on a drinking, like it's a switch between like work mode and like having fun mode, like is so drastic. And
wow,
it was great.
That's so reflective of Japanese salaryman culture, maybe.
So, yeah, definitely. Right.
So it kind of sounds like a family environment.
Definitely, yeah. I didn't have a lot of friends when I got here, so. All my friends are like all I can call friends are all people who work at Ippudo at that moment. So
that's nice.
It's really great.
Right. So the chef Kanegai-san, Mihiro Kanegai, he's a really great character.
Oh yeah, too. He's my master. Yeah.
Right. So you got really lucky to have that environment first time you stepped into this culture.
Definitely. Yeah. I was so lucky. Yeah.
Okay. So and then you worked. It put up for 8 years?
Yes, from 2008 to 2015, yes.
Nice. So, and then you went to N Japanese restaurant, Japanese brasserie in West Village.
Mm-hmm.
So, how did it happen and what did you learn?
So, like the transitioning between Ippudo to N Japanese brasserie, I was working in Ippudo for 8 years and I learned a lot of things and I did not want to leave, but at the same time, at one point I would start working at the noodle factory and soup factory at Ippudo, and I was experiencing a lot of mass production with such a care to each ingredients, and that like kind of reignited my passion of like actual cooking. Like obviously mass production is still cooking, but at the same time I want to be presented to the customers. Like I want to see the people who's eating what I make.
Right.
And so that's what ignited my passion again. So, I started working at N Japanese Brasserie. Japanese Brasserie has really big open kitchen where I can literally see every single customer's face that's sitting down, especially in the counter. And that was the whole experience of me. Re-seeing what I'm actually making matters to the customer's feeling, like that makes them happy and I see them happy, that makes me happy, wants to work more, stuff like that. That's the main thing I learned at. And
right. Yeah. I would imagine your grandmother wanted to cook for you, your grandfather wanted to cook for you to see that smile. And it's interesting, right? And Japanese brasserie is like, a lot of celebrities go there.
Definitely, yeah.
And it's a little different than ambience.
Right. Well, that's a whole different fun because I get to see a lot of people who I've never personally met. And I've only seen the TV, Instagram, website, Google search, those people are going to be there. And I'm like, God damn, like every day, you see so many different people. I'm so happy to see, as well as regular customers, as well as I get to recognize a lot of faces in there, and also celebrities. Like it was just really happy all the time.
Right. So that's the customer side of, the connection you had. And then you started working at Sakamai.
Yes. Sakamai was really it was also my fate, because one of a coworker who I used to work at Ippudo after I quit, and he hit me up. He's still working at the Sakamai, but he was like looking for a person who's working in the kitchen and like hit me up like, okay, I'm going there. And then I met Akiyama-san from Sakamai. yeah, that's how I got into the job.
Right. So maybe for listeners who's not familiar with Sakamai, what kind of restaurant is Sakamai?
Sakamai is definitely a Japanese restaurant, but with Akiyama-san's passion, this like, it's really twisted and abstract in a really good way. It's a new side of Japanese restaurant, I would say. It's not traditional, but it has tradition going on in every single dish that he makes. It has the tradition in it, but it doesn't come out traditionally.
Interesting. Yeah. Right. So it's in the Lower East Side, and then, you know, Sakamai means sake rice. And so the theme is sake. And I really love going there because it's the ambiance is so beautiful. It's kind of modern. Definitely. But the Japanese-based menu, Akiyama-san, he used to work at the Lan restaurant and all those different things in the States. Right. But he was trained all formally in Kaiseki restaurant in Japan too, right?
Right. And that's what makes me like surprised all the time, because every dish, like new dish he creates, it's so different. Like taste profile is like different from what I would expect by looking at dishes. And the presentation itself is like totally different. But when you eat it, it matches that the look of the dish and taste of the dish, like surprisingly matches, and just gives you like wow feeling all the time.
Right, and it's so beautifully presented. Yeah, so yeah, I think that's interesting, right? Because we're going to talk about yoshoku, but Akiyama-san has different way to merge Western and classic Japanese ideas and philosophies. So you're learning that thing from Akiyama-san?
Absolutely, yes. Like, I'm always surprised. Nowadays, since I'm working at Moga, I don't get to talk to him a lot. I don't physically see him a lot, but I still see Sakamai's Instagram, sometimes call him, and, you know, always surprised by, like, how many new dishes, like, he's been making, and it always, like, intrigued me.
Right. So let's talk about Moga. So Moga is a kind of sister restaurant of Sakamai, right? Can you just explain?
So Moga, like you said, Moga is a sister restaurant of Sakamai, themed on Moga, M-O-G-A, aka Modern Girl. So we're like, our bar's themes like more like 1920s, you know, where females start wearing flapper, you know, more modernized culture.
Right. So Moga, Modern Girls.
Right.
Right. Yeah, I heard the word Moga was born because, you know, after World War I, Japan was kind of rich and from selling all those, you know, the arms that time, like far away from Europe. And so there's a thriving moment of Japan economically.
Definitely, yes.
And culturally, I'm more influenced by France and America. So young girls started to wear, instead of kimono, it's like a Western thing.
Yeah.
And if you Google Mogas, they're so cool.
It's so cool. Right. Yeah.
So, and along with that, there's yoshoku. Yes. We're going to talk about it. So, but how did you start working at Moga from Sakamai?
When I got hired at Sakamai, Akiyama-san and owners were already trying to open up the Moga. There's already a concept there. And they wanted to open up, and Akiyama-san asked me if I was interested in taking charge in this place. So that's how I got into Moga.
Right. So Moga is on Houston. It's in the West Village.
Yes.
And it's called the Bar Moga.
Yes.
Right. So it's kind of bar and with a table. So it's like a very approachable and stylish ambience.
Yeah,
but the food is serious too.
Definitely.
So what's your responsibility at Bar Moga?
I'm currently taking a chef de cuisine position, in charge of, you know, obviously the kitchen overall, and you know, the making sure the quality of food is never goes down, and, you know, but rise up, and also taking care of customers, you know, day by day. That's my responsibility.
Because effectively, Akiyama-san cannot be cloned, so you are really in charge of Bar Moga's operation.
Absolutely. I hope he thinks that way too.
Right. Okay, so let's take a quick break here. And then when we come back, we'll talk about the unique menu at Bar Moga, which features yoshoku, an important genre of Japanese food. So please stay with us. Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Corin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. The knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan Asian to American, and that is why they are located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Corin's Tribeca showroom is home to the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan. Stop by to view their exquisitely designed tableware and the rarest natural sharpening stones. They have a whole range of knife services, from repair and rust removal to reshaping and realigning. Corin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the highest quality Japanese design to your table so you can experience the unparalleled quality of Japanese craftsmanship in your home or restaurant. For more information, visit corin.com. Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats, broadcasting live from our studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, and my guest today is Shintaro Eleazar Okuda, the chef de cuisine at Baumoga in West Village, New York City. So we talked about the Moga, the concept of Moga. And what is the concept of Baumoga?
So concept of Baumoga is... Obviously, the MOGA stands for a modern girl. We have this like retro feeling now, you know, like it's in 2018, but we're still like having this 1920s theme is what the original concept was. And, a lot of female working in that restaurant and, they'll wear classic, vest and shirt, black pants. Classic style with the floral tie that represents, modern girl. It's still like in a classic, but with the modern, like kind of, way of dressing up. And
by the way, so the Moga, I know that there's mobile, modern board.
Yes. Well, I'm hoping that will be me.
Yeah. You are. Right. Yeah. So, okay. Sorry, I interrupted.
Yes. So the concept itself is like that. And as well as 1920s, modern girl, the modernized culture also involves with the food. Like after World War One, we as Japanese, this is what I read from various website about the 1920s. But as after World War One ended, we realized as Japanese how small we are compared to all people across the world, and that what we decided is to eat the flour.
So physically small, so you have to grow.
We have to be bigger to, at that moment, as a Japanese, Japan has to conquer the world. That's what they're thinking, so they have to be bigger. That's so they start eating flour. And that's how like Yoshoku is kind of implemented to the culture, I would say. And that's our concept for Baumoga too.
Interesting. Right. So let's just go back to that, the Japanese diet changed.
Yes.
Because up until Meiji period, when first time meat was allowed to eat. Because religiously, we couldn't eat meat.
Right.
And I heard a rabbit was, it's a fake, but they call it, vegetables and not meat, so that they can eat. So where does it come from, right? But so people couldn't eat, especially beef.
Right.
And that's the beginning of the change of the diet.
Definitely.
Right.
Yes.
So that's the yoshoku. So, so what is yoshoku? Like, by definition.
Yoshoku literally translated to westernized or like Western food, I would say. But the actuality of yoshoku is the literally Western food that's implemented to Japanese culture, so that Japanese people are like allowed to, like not allowed, but easier for them, for the Japanese people, the old style, old school style of the 1920s Japanese people, like, easier for them to eat. So it's not so potent, and also uses ingredients that comes from Japan. Or like, and it's in Japan to make Western food as much as possible with the Japanese ingredients. And I think that's what the yoshoku is.
Right. So it's distinctive because you don't see in the traditional food, you don't see cream or flour or, of course, a lot of meat.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the examples of yoshoku?
So one of yoshoku example, definitely gratin.
We say gratin.
Gratin, yes. Yes, in Japanese, yes, it's gratin. And doria.
You
know, I think those are the most iconic yoshoku dish, I would imagine. You know, using macaroni and bechamel, which is totally French style. With you know, sometimes you put the seafood or curry, which is, with, this is like, for the doria, this is like the twist of Japanese comes in, I think. You know, with the Western food, like macaroni, bechamel, and then you put the curry on top just to see what this takes to, like,
right, challenge
right.
it.
Yep.
Right, that worked out.
Yeah, definitely worked out. But I think, yeah, those two, I, you know, the flour, like I said, flour, milk, macaroni, like all those stuff, like we don't usually eat in Japan, like especially back in the days. And, you know, trying to make it as like suitable to Japanese culture as possible. And I think that's what gratin comes from. And yeah.
Yeah. So it's always like everything else. Japanese people take something.
Right.
And bring to something or different version or next level or more obsessive way to express it. So, yeah. So, I mean, there are yoshoku restaurants in Japan. And I think they're still very popular.
I think so. I think it's rather called like soul food almost, I think, nowadays. It's like you know, when you eat ramen in Japan, you just simply feel satisfied. It's attached to your soul almost. You know, if you eat sushi, obviously that is going to be attached to your soul. Like you just feel automatically satisfied. I think yoshoku is one of those food already from my perspective. Every time, you know, like I'm sure every Japanese people, when they're a child, they have definitely eaten omurice, right? And that's like attached to your heart. Like that's your mom's cooking or like, you know.
Right. So it's beyond just the taste experience. It's like a nostalgia and taste memories. Yeah. And yeah, that make you cry. Yeah. So yeah, I think it's interesting. You know, the word Showa comes to my mind too. So Showa, Japanese, you know, the Western, you know, year numbering.
Right.
It's always tied with Japanese classic way of calling. The era is represented by the existing emperor.
Right.
So it's now Heisei.
Right.
And the last one is Showa. And the Showa period, that was a long time. And the great emperor. And, you know, there's a thriving culture of yoshoku too.
Yep.
So I think recently Showa is, I think, regarded as very beautiful time.
Definitely, yeah.
Right? It's almost like, you know, like, and again, there's a nostalgic way of living.
Yeah, me as myself, like I was born in Heisei first. So I used to see Showa as like really nostalgic, nostalgic way. And, you know, I would think it was like old era for me. But nowadays, you know, Showa era is the one that like make the Japan, I don't want to use this word, but make Japan great, you know, and to make this the state, the position where Japan is now, I think it was made in the Showa era. And I myself was lucky enough to experience that in Heisei, like as you see what the result happened from Showa, to experience what's even going to happen in Heisei. Like I get to experience everything in the Heisei era. So
Yeah, it's interesting because I know my dad's time, that's when he worked like ridiculously hard.
Right.
And he created this and it made Japan great.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then when my dad was dating with my mom, they would go to a restaurant eating yoshoku.
Right.
That kind of really beautiful thing.
Yep, back in Showa, yoshoku is definitely like fancy food that you take your girl to. Like that's the guy's definitely go-to spot, I think.
Right. So, now, so what kind of yoshoku do you serve at Bamuga?
At Bamuga, we are serving so-called classic yoshoku, I would say. You know, like I said, gratin, curry doria, we have it, and also kani cream croquettes, ebi fry,
You know, cunning cream is a crab.
Crab, snow croquette. Crab cream croquettes, yes.
I don't know why it's crab is just, you know, we say croquette, right? And there are so many different kinds of croquette. Uh-huh. But that specific, the crab cream croquette is a part of Yoshok. I don't know why.
So, I from my understanding, crab cream croquette, it comes from, I would say, crab cake, almost like American crab cake. You know, that take it to the Japanese way and, you know, make a crab cake. How about we batter it with the panko? And how about we fry it? See how it goes. I think that's I think that's literally how that happened.
Right. And usually, you know, the cunning cream croquette, it's like so delicate.
It is. It is.
Right? It's almost like a fluffy and like a dessert. Yeah. And it's like, you know, mouthfeel. Yeah. That's the nostalgia I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And what else?
We also have omurice. Definitely, that's our signature dish.
So let's dig into that.
Okay. So I think omurice is one of the most iconic Yoshoku dish, as well as gratin and doryat. I think gratin, doryat, omurice will be like the three like kings of Yoshoku, I would say. And like I talked about, omurice has attached to every single Japanese soul, I believe. That's there.
So what is it?
Omurice is a chicken, chicken and ketchup fried rice with the omelet on top, or either covered with the eating with the ketchup. That's I think that's a classic way. Ketchup on top.
You know, the omelet is so thin.
It is, yes.
But strong enough to keep the rice inside.
That's a I think that's one of the technique that Japanese made it to.
And you put the knife, you know, throughout the surface of the, the omelet.
Right.
Like, whoa, that's the whole smell come out. And
Yeah. So the one omelet that we serve is that style, the soft cooked omelet on top of chicken rice, and we just cut it open and it burst.
There's a video on the website too, right?
Yes.
I was like, oh my god, I'm gonna
Yeah, there's a lot of videos.
So. I mean, everybody seems to understand the sushi and ramen lately in the US. But, you know, what is the charm of Yoshoku, which I don't think people know enough about?
To like American people, I think that what the Yoshoku is, what's also familiar for them as a food culture, you know, like unlike sushi or like, you know, regular traditional Japanese washoku, they know it because we have opened up a restaurant. There's a lot of, you know, thrive going on. But the Yoshoku is something new but that's also familiar for them because, you know, fried prawn, croquettes, like it looks like crab cake, you know, kani cream croquettes, like everything that's familiar, but something different. Is what I think Yoshoku is for Americans, I would say. So I want them to know that it's another side of Japanese food, yet it's also familiar and nostalgia for them too.
Interesting, because it's so approachable that you eat it, you notice, this is a little different.
Right.
So that's a nice discovery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like again, I think. You know, I've never been to many of the Yoshoku restaurants in Japan lately, but do you know any
definitely.
In Japan?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the Yoshoku itself is like really, like I said, really popular in Japan. Like there's Gusto, you know, like if you're going to super cheap places, it's Gusto. And if you go to
that's like a
high-class
family restaurant,
right.
Gusto.
Or like, you know, like Rengate.
Rengate is a classic one, right?
It
the serious restaurant.
Very classic, yes.
Yes, I used to go there.
Right.
And, it's like almost like going to Kissaten.
Yeah.
Kissaten is a Japanese classic style cafe.
Right.
And you go there not for the sake of, just for the sake of drinking coffee.
Yep.
It's the whole ambience.
Yeah.
And the jazz music behind those certain things. Right. Okay.
So nice.
Yeah. So, but, you know, we talked about, you know, I had a guest, Coco Kayoko-seo, and Frank Cisneros about the beverage program at the Balmoga, which is astonishing.
Yes, it's really great.
Right?
Yeah.
So you have like, I think one of the biggest collection about the whiskey.
I think so. I think we're one of the biggest whiskey selection.
Right. And the cocktails, of course, by Frank. And I mean, Coco, she's promoting all those amazing beverages, which is to be known mm-hmm. to the public.
Right.
So when you cook your food, mm-hmm. do you think of pairings?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's another interesting things happening in Olga, because, you know, like a lot of restaurants pairs with wine, you know, if you go to a Japanese restaurant, you go pair with sake, shochu. Mm-hmm. Those are like, you know, fairly existed already, but it's in a great things that we make food as a yoshoku style, and you can still order cocktail and it just perfectly matches with the every food, with the almost every cocktails, I would say.
Nice.
It's very unique. At the same time, it's really matching with the food because they use Japanese ingredients a lot too. It just naturally goes well together.
Right. So maybe yoshoku has many, you know, points of cross culture.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's easier to pair with different kinds of cocktails and beverages?
I think so. Since especially, you know, like liquor, all those things come from foreign country other than Japan. You know, obviously whiskeys like vodka, gin, like now we're making it in Japan too, and there's a lot of great things going on.
Right.
But it definitely started from Europe, you know, everywhere else but Japan. So minding you that it's taken into Japanese culture and making start pairing with yoshoku. I think it's fairly easier to pair with the food and cocktail or right. like any liquor.
Right. So yeah, I'm imagining going to the sit at the counter at Bamoga, maybe order an omurice.
Yes.
And then you said, wait, a little rainy day today, but this will be so comfortable and such a treat for yourself.
Yes, that's what I want every single customer to feel, especially at Bamoga, because my experience of making food is always like looking at the people who's eating my dish and also that taking back the experiences myself when my grandparents made me food and always make me comfortable, and they were always looking at me with the, you know, this like soft smile. They're having their moment, I would believe, you know.
Right.
Yeah, so I want to do the same, and I want customers, every single customer that comes to Bamoga, to experience the same thing. They want to, they're gonna eat and they're gonna drink and they're gonna be happy, and I want to see them happy.
Right. I like the, you know, the energy of Bamoga, because I think that's, you know, the kitchen's intention and the hospitality communicates throughout the whole restaurant.
I hope so, yeah.
Yeah. So how your customers accept yoshoku?
They're very acceptive. People really like, you know, they definitely start off with this omurice viral video thing. I think it's definitely start with that. But right now, every single customer is know what they want and enjoy their food all the time, and, you know, always try new things if it's possible, you know. There are definitely like certain customers who orders like certain things that they know, you know, like only omurice for four people. That was like before.
Right.
One omurice shared it with four people. Now, you know, people are getting individual omurice. We're getting, you know,
I don't want to share it.
different things. Yep. So it's great.
Right. Interesting. Because I'm often asked, what's next after ramen? Right. And of course, not izakaya. It's a big genre too.
Right.
But the yoshoku, I think, is pretty approachable and such a comfort food.
Definitely. Yeah. So I hope it's going to be a next topic of Japanese food.
Yeah. And it's almost like sushi or ramen, it's simple, but to do it right, you need skills.
Right, definitely, yeah.
So, I mean, I don't make omurice myself because the omelette part is very difficult. And I guarantee I'm going to break the omelette.
It's just all you need to buy is good pan. Just one good pan will do the magic, I think.
Oh, really? The cast iron?
Mm-hmm.
I do have a cast iron.
Okay.
Doesn't work so well. Yeah, I think maybe I need a class. So, okay, so what is your plan?
Well, my plan right now is to make Bamoga as famous as possible. You know, we have a great opening menu that created by Akiyama-san. So, you know, I'm intending to keep this tradition and, you know, make this place as noticeable as possible so that people will come, and I get to see a lot of people's face. And I get to see people's being happy. And yeah, that's a current mission I'm having, I think.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope you can spread Yosuk culture more.
Definitely,
beyond New York City even too.
Definitely.
So,
yeah.
Okay, so where can we find your, what you're doing and everything online?
Okay, so I'm extremely horrible at doing social media things. As you see right now, I'm very nervous, like, as I'm in this radio show too. But, I do have an Instagram. I think that's the most approachable thing to find me, I think.
So what's that?
It's at the Rude Boy Shin Shin, RUDEBOY.
Okay.
Shin Shin, SHIN, two times.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just my personal Instagram account. That does, you know, I put like a lot of Bar Moga's food. So
yeah, to check that. Okay, so, and then of course the Bar Moga.
Definitely at Bar Moga, yes.
Right. Okay, so good luck and keep me posted.
Yes, definitely. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for coming. So listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japanese@heritageradionetwork.org or akikotema.com. And Japan Needs is live at 3 p.m. on Mondays and always available at heritageradionetwork.org, iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. And our engineer is Matt Patterson. And thank you for listening. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.